Hello, I'm Shania Twain. You're listening to a special Friday edition of The Current.
We have one goal, to give every child the right to an education.
Support.
One goal.
One goal, education for all.
Education beats poverty.
One name.
One child.
One goal.
Education one, poverty nil.
Around the world, there are 72 million children who don't have access to education. And now FIFA, the international governing body of soccer, has teamed up with the Global Campaign for Education to try to change that. The result is the One Goal campaign. And the idea is to make sure that every single child in the world is able to go to school. It's a lofty goal, but the campaign has a powerful backer. Her Majesty Queen Rania Al Abdullah of Jordan is the co-founder of the One Goal campaign, and she's in Amman, Jordan. Hello.
Hi, Shania. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Universal access to education worldwide by 2015. That's the One Goal campaign's ultimate goal, and it's an ambitious one. How realistic is this, really?
Well, you know, Shania, it is very achievable. In the year 2000, it was a real watershed moment for humanity because we all came together as one global family, and we said we wanted to alleviate the hopelessness that many people face in the world. So we set ourselves some goals. We call them the Millennium Development Goals. And one of those goals was to try to achieve education for all by the year 2015. Now, we're two-thirds of the way there, but we've only done one-third of the job. So, you know, there is some good news to report that 40 million more children are in school today, but we can't put our feet up yet because there are 72 million others who aren't. And it is possible to get them into school. It would cost about $11 billion a year to get all children in low-income countries into primary school. Now, it may sound like a lot, but actually, if I put it in perspective for you, it's what the golf industry has generated for the Canadian economy, or actually less than what the golf industry generates for the Canadian economy annually. So it's something that we can achieve. Mm-hmm. And we want to hope, you know, one goal is a global movement. We're partnering with the World Cup to try to get to tap into the most watched sporting event of 2010 and to make global education the most important item on the international agenda. So, you know, by the time the final whistle goes off in July of next year, we are hoping to gather 30 million signatures from people all around the world and to submit that to global leaders when they meet in Canada, actually, uh-huh. This summer, and really show them that global education is actually a global demand. It's something they have to, you know, there are promises that they have to fulfill to the children of the developing world.
Right. Okay, so when we're talking about 11 billion, you see, obviously there are so many challenges in overcoming poverty overall. Okay, guaranteeing access to food, housing, clean drinking water, farmland, providing jobs and loans for entrepreneurs, fighting government corruption, even global warming is wreaking havoc in the developing world. Where does education rank in all of those priorities? And how much of the money, the $11 billion, are we looking for that's going to have to go to the infrastructure in order to get these schools into place for the kids to attend?
Well, you know, here's what I love about this initiative. You know, I've been doing this job now for over 10 years, and I've had to deal with a lot of issues, and I've come face to face with a lot of challenges that our world faces, the ones that you mentioned, poverty, hunger, disease, extremism, climate change, all of those. And they're all very important issues that we need to deal with. But I can't think of a single one of these issues that can't be helped, if not resolved, through education. So if there's one solution that underpins all of the challenges that we face today, it is education. The sad thing is that, you know, because our world is so fast-paced and we're bombarded with information and we rely on so many conveniences in our life, I think we've kind of lost our patience a little bit. We have a short attention span. We expect quick fixes to problems.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is, if we really want to solve these issues, we have to get down and do the hard work. And education is part of that hard work.
Okay,
it's not a quick fix, but it's a long-term solution. education. And that's why I think it has to be on the priority list, very high on the priority list of most politicians.
Right.
Now, so the thing is with education, it's very easy to get people to agree that education is important. What I find is a challenge is to make people realize that it's an urgent issue. You know, you'll hear most politicians when they're campaigning for positions saying that they're going to fix up schools. But once they get elected, you find that education starts to drop on their priority list. And that's because the rewards of education are not maybe reaped during the political cycle. But actually, it is an urgent issue. And in many cases, it's a matter of life and death. You know, we know that education reduces maternal mortality, child mortality. You know, if we get all children into school today, this is quite surprising. If we get all children in underprivileged countries into school today, we can prevent 7 million new cases of HIV in the next decade. Now, that's a lot of lives saved, you know, and that just
putting the priorities, putting priorities in the right order is what you're talking about, I think, if and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, putting education at certainly, if not first, up at the top of the priorities, getting everything in order so that everything else that is, of course, important will fall into place.
Right.
And I do agree with you there. Okay, Ken, so you have painted a little bit of a picture already about the situation as it looks right now in terms of global access to education, or the lack of it, is more what you were maybe touching on. But
right.
How is it looking on the positive side as far as access to education? Are we getting anywhere in that regard?
Yes, I mean, as I said, we have 40 more million children in school since 2000. So that's something that to be very proud of. But there's still a lot of need out there, and there's a lot that we can do. So, you know, for example, I urge everybody in Canada to sign up to joinonegoal.org and put their names down there, because if we can make our voices heard, then we can really get politicians to meet the promises of the children in the developing world.
Okay.
And you know, it's
about signing their name and showing their support. So signing their name, showing their support, it doesn't even necessarily mean
showing their support. You know, this is not a hard luck humanitarian case. You know, there's a very convincing and compelling economic reason to get children into schools. The prosperity of nations and their development depends on it. Ignorance is a dark cloud that can hang over humanity and that could be a festering ground for so many other problems that can rise. So it's so urgent for us to really realize, and I mean, even I'm sure you understand, and you know, how would we have been blessed with your beautiful songs had you not gone to school? I'm sure, you know, your education underpins and sets the foundation for your own music creativity. I know in my job, you know, when I became a queen, I wasn't prepared. I didn't know I was going to come into this position. I think the only thing that saw me through was my education. It's the one thing that I could fall back on, and one thing that could give me the confidence to do the job that I do.
Yeah, the security of the foundation, and the foundation is the education and the knowledge. Now, I did have another question. I wanted to go back just a little bit, because we are talking also about, well, we're talking about the Western world as well, Canada, my country, the U.S. So to what degree, as far as helping and reaching out to help and sign up and to give money, to what degree should the developed world, the rich countries, be responsible for making sure that impoverished nations have access to education? Because the Western world is also feeling a crunch right now. The average Canadian guy, for example, might be having a hard time making ends meet himself because of the financial crisis. So how do we ask that guy to reach into his pocket and give, or to even want to pay attention to what's going on in other parts of the world regarding education when he's so worried about his own family? How do we reach out to that guy and get him to care?
First of all, Canada has always been a standard bearer when it comes to international development. And I think I don't know if most Canadians know that, but it's a reputation that you can really be proud of. And the Canadians have really made an incredible investment in their own education system, and it's much admired around the world. There's a lot of expertise that we can benefit from Canada when it comes to teacher training, when it comes to providing bilingual education, which many developing countries struggle with. You also have a very strongly rooted ethnic community who who can transport their experience and skills to countries around the world. But I understand there is the financial crisis and people are hurting. But I don't think that that's an excuse, because as I said, the numbers we need are very achievable. And also, you know, growth will return. People will find jobs, but children only have one chance at a childhood. So reducing funding saves taxpayers in the developed world a few pennies, but it costs children in the developing world their future.
Yeah, time is crucial.
When you put it in that perspective, you realize that there's a sense of urgency here. And you also have to just look at your own children and see how important it is for you to make sure that they have a quality education. Think of other parents who also want the same for their children, because education, you know, it's the greatest justice that you can do for people around the world. They start off on an equal footing, and then they can make the most of it out of their own lives. In many cases, it's a springboard out of poverty. It gives you the skills to make the most of your own life. It really helps you shape your future. So, I mean, that's something that we owe to the rest of the world. It's an excellent investment to make.
Yes, I agree completely.
Especially educating girls. I have a very soft spot for educating girls.
And I wanted to ask you about that. So why do you think it is more difficult for girls to get education? Because it seems to be such an obvious problem and a disappointing one. But what do you have to say on that? Because the boys seem to have an easier time getting into the schools in these countries. So why is it so much difficult for girls?
Yeah. You know, around the world, there are 40 million girls that are trapped and untapped. They're trapped in poverty or early marriage or child labor, and they're untapped at the communities and countries who really need them the most. And if you want to imagine just a typical day for one of these girls, they wake up early before dawn. They have to work for hours to fetch water. They're hungry. They reach home to do home chores and take care of their relatives. You know, and I'm talking about girls that are sometimes 5 years old. You know, it would break my heart if that was one of my daughters. But on the other hand, when a girl gets educated, she grows up to be a woman who spends more on the nutrition of her own children, on their health, on their education. She gives more to society. So girls are like turbochargers for social and economic development. You know, unleashing their potential creates a tidal wave benefits for everyone. Health, prosperity, peace, you know, and it's just a matter of, you know, to get them into school. Sometimes
so they're more preoccupied, you're saying, by carrying so much weight in doing everything else on a more practical level in daily life. And this is why they're not necessarily getting around to education.
Yes, sadly, there is a bias. You know, there is a gender bias, and girls, you know, families tend to prioritize education of boys over girls, and girls are viewed as you know, having to earn money for the family and take care of relatives and do house chores, and that's really sad, because the dividends that are to be gained when you educate a girl are just enormous, and it can be really transformative force in any society to educate girls.
Yes, absolutely. Listen, so can I ask you then, the One Goal campaign hopes to collect 30 million signatures to petition world leaders. So how many signatures do you have at the moment now?
I haven't checked lately, but, you know, this campaign is going to get underway in the spring. You know, we already have collected millions of signatures so far, but, you know,
Fantastic.
We're hoping that by the G8 and G20 meetings that are happening in Canada, that we will present those 30 million signatures to the global leaders. And I have a feeling we're going to probably collect many more than 30 million. It's not just a number. It's really the significance, the sense that this is an urgent matter, that there is a global demand for this, that really people want you to, as politicians, to live up to the promises that you made.
Right. So, you see, is improving access to education about money, or is this really about political will? So this is another factor.
Well, yeah. First of all, political will is born out of popular will. So at the popular level, we need to make sure that we're mobilizing, that we're making our voices heard. That will affect the political decisions. And sure, it's about ensuring that we have the right funds and making sure that we're distributing these funds in the right kind of way. So we have to have an infrastructure that is improved. That needs to be upgraded. We need to focus more on results. We need to look at new ways of forming partnerships. So it's not just the government that's responsible for education. education, but that you have the private sector and non-governmental institutions involved. There's got to be an international governing body that makes sure that this money is well spent, that we're getting the results that we need, that there's quality. Because it's not just about numbers. You know, any increase in the numbers of children going to school should also be matched by a leap in the quality. Because sadly, too many of the classrooms today are undersupplied and overcrowded. So, you know, a lot of these kids are having to attend in classes of 55 kids when the classroom only fits 20, you know. And so they're not, a lot of them drop out early or they graduate not having the right math or reading skills. So the quality is a very, very important issue, and teacher training is instrumental. The world today needs 10 million extra teachers to improve the quality of education.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the infrastructure and what it really takes to be able to set up an infrastructure, the infrastructure that's needed for this to really succeed in place on the ground. So something as simple as the clean water, or you're saying supplies or qualified teachers. So how do you incorporate those realities into your program?
Well, you know, this is a multifaceted problem that needs to be tackled from different areas. You know, we need to fix up the schools. In many countries, it would help to abolish the school fees, to provide free meals for children, to train teachers, you know. So it has to be tackled from many different angles to achieve the results that we need. And it's very much a case-by-case kind of situation. Some governments are quite efficient and they do a good job of upgrading their educational system. Others need to be held to task, and we need to really monitor their progress and reward them for good results. And if they're not achieving those good results, then maybe sometimes you need to withhold some of the funding until they kind of improve their situation.
Okay. Now, certainly you are involved in many, many charitable things. You have so much goodwill and a giant heart, that's obvious. Besides your work promoting education worldwide, you're also leading efforts in Jordan. So please tell me a little bit more about that, about Madrasati.
Yeah, it's, you know, as I said, education has become a real passion for me just because I've seen the way it can transform people's lives. And, you know, there's no better way than to start at home. And here in Jordan, we have a good situation. We have a good enrollment rate, 99% literacy rate, but we wanted to really improve the quality of the education. So Madrasati means my school in Arabic, and it's a program to rejuvenate the most disadvantaged public schools in Jordan. So basically by revamping the learning environment, we hope to get kids more excited about going to school because they have a cleaner, brighter, more stimulating kind of learning environment. So we started in 2008, and so far we fixed 200 schools. In April, we're starting on another 100 schools, and by the end of the program, in 5 years, we would have reached 500 schools. And the interesting thing about this model is that we've adopted a public-private partnership style. We realize that education is in everyone's interest. So it has to be everyone's responsibility, not just the government. The government is rich with good intentions, but they don't have the resources to really handle this issue on their own.
We need the compassion of the people. We need the compassion of the community.
The compassion of the people. And, you know, we got the private sector involved. So in many cases, the private sector companies came in and adopted some of these schools. So that led to an injection of much needed cash that we didn't have access to. And we've also got the community involved, the teachers, the students, the parents, community leaders. They all got together and saw it as their responsibility to really pick up the pieces and really revamp some of those rundown schools and turn them into community, vibrant community hubs that all the community can share in. And it's been incredible for me when I visit these schools that have been fixed, just the sense of pride that the students feel. They have a sense of ownership of their school. They're very protective over it. And I spoke to some of the families and the members of the community, and they all feel so energized because they feel that they, you know, they were able to improve their own environment. They feel empowered. So if something's not going well, you know what? We have the power to change our own lives. And that's just so rewarding to see. And just to see the change in the mentality and the psyche of the people has been the greatest reward.
Okay, that's wonderful. I just want to go back to the G8 for a second. What do you want to see happen at the G8 this summer when it comes to education priorities?
Well, you know, the G8 and the G20 meetings are very important venues where critical issues facing the globe are discussed at the very highest level. So, you know, issues are tackled, whether it's health or labor or law enforcement or energy policy. So, we want to, during that meeting, to make sure that the global education is at the top of the global agenda for some of these leaders meeting in Canada.
You're pushing for priority. You're pushing for addressing the crisis and urgency of it.
The urgency of it, you know, to create the political will to make sure that it's number one on their priority list, that it is something that we need to pay attention to. It's something that underpins the solutions to all the other issues that they're tackling.
Yes.
And it may not be a quick fix, but as I said, it is the long-term solution, and we need to see it that way.
And which countries are taking a global lead on this issue?
Well, as I said, Canada is a country whose achievements we're very proud of. The UK has done a marvelous job. A lot of the Scandinavian countries have delivered. But I think we still need Canada's goodwill and leadership in this to try to persuade other leaders to get on board and to be as committed to this issue as Canada has been.
Okay, so Canada, come on, keep pulling your weight on this issue.
Exactly. I think don't be complacent. Put your feet up. It's time to really act, actually.
Yes, it really is. It sounds as if, certainly from my perspective, I've learned a lot today, and certainly about the urgency of it all.
Absolutely. And Shania, I have to mention that you are a true inspiration to all of us. First of all, I'm a fan of yours, of your music, but I'm also a big fan of you as a person. And I know how committed you are to children and how much you've done for underprivileged children, whether it's through providing meals or shelter or just simply emotional support. It's really been very inspirational to see what you've done as well.
Well, thank you so much. The feeling is very, very mutual. And, you know, I just wanted to say, I know all of these initiatives that you are pursuing are, you know, a huge inspiration to everyone. I think it's a big topic to a lot of people that I talk about, especially when I'm discussing my own initiatives regarding charity. And I've got my own personal feeling about why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I was just running, you know, personally from you, If you were just to sum it up in a very short sentence, what is it personally? Why are you personally doing this and choosing this education? I know you have children, so maybe it's more associated with your own, with the way you see your children and how grateful you are that they're not kids at risk of lack of education.
Well, you know what it is? I think for me, it's just trying to achieve justice. As I said, I've been exposed to so many problems around the world. And I feel that the one way that you can empower people and give them a fair chance at making something out of their lives is through education. You give somebody the skill, you give them the opportunity, and then they can make the most out of their own lives. So it's just about fairness. You know, there's no greater equalizer in this world than education.
I think that sums it up very beautifully. It's all about equalizing, and education is at the root of so much of the suffering. We could probably manage much better, at least a lot of the suffering in the world, if everybody had a better education. Even those of us who are technically educated, we need to be more educated about the urgency of those
Absolutely.
Who are not getting an education.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Your Majesty. It's been a real pleasure for me. Thank you for agreeing to do this, and I really look forward to crossing paths with you again.
It's been wonderful chatting with you, Shania, and I hope to see you soon.
Okay, same here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Her Majesty Queen Rania Al Abdullah is in Amman, Jordan. Stay with us on CBC Radio 1 this afternoon at 1 o'clock, 1:30 in Newfoundland and parts of Labrador. It's Living Out Loud. Host Robin Brown brings you stories of immigrants and refugees, including a child pop star from Macedonia who is now a promising opera singer. And tonight at 8:30 on CBC Television, 9 o'clock in Newfoundland and parts of Labrador, it's the season of premiere of Marketplace. Erica Johnson teams up with contractor Mike Holmes to take on home inspectors. After that, it's the Fifth Estate. Tonight, an investigation into why Ashley Smith, a troubled young woman who was in trouble with the law, ended up dead on the floor of her prison cell. The Fifth Estate is at 9 o'clock on CBC Television, 9:30 in Newfoundland and parts of Labrador. And we'll leave you with a song that has inspired me over the years very much. This is Stevie Wonder with Free. I'm Shania Twain. I want to thank from the bottom of my heart Anna Maria Tremonti for extending this invitation to host The Current this morning. I've enjoyed every second of it. Thank you so much, and I hope you have too. Thanks for listening.
I think there are very few people on this earth that are totally free. I'm not free, but I'm working on it.